All right, now we'll move to item two, the HR dashboard, Jonathan Herman. This is an informational item.
Thank you. Well, good morning, Chair Emerson, State Forester Peter Doherty, board members. Good morning, Chair Emerson, State Forester Peter Doherty, board members. It's that time of year again to present the HR dashboard, and so I have some more slides for you again this year. It's a new year, and we're all looking forward, and this is just a moment to take some time and look backward to 2017 and look at some human resources data that we have captured for your information. So we're going to take a look at a number of different things, including appointments, age distribution, added this year some information on workforce diversity, demographics for you within the agency, retirement rates, retention of our employees, leadership training to maintain our succession management, and some information on safe claims and vehicle incidents. This year, we had 867.3 authorized FTE. I'll just move through this quickly. There's some data there, the number of positions we have, both permanent and seasonal. How many employees we hired during the peak of our fire season, and how many employees we have hired during our winter season. This is a snapshot of new appointments by year. On the left, the bar graph shows the number of permanent LD appointments over the past 5 years. On the right, it shows the number of seasonal appointments over the past 5 years. Those on the right, the seasonal appointments, are actually new seasonal hires. It does not reflect the number of seasonals who, pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement, have recall rights back to their seasonal positions. So as you can see, in 2016, we had a higher number of brand new seasonal employees following three pretty intense fire seasons. In 2017, that number declined a little bit, fell back more in line with our previous, those first 3 years, probably the retention of some of those new hires that we got in 2016 on the seasonal side. On the permanent LD side, you can see there was actually a lower number of LDs comparatively to the 5 years, LD and permanent positions, and not exactly sure what that cause of that, but it may be, you know, we did have a hiring freeze, and that hiring freeze did set us back quite a bit in terms of a backup for filling some positions that are still in the process of being filled as we roll into a new year. Snapshot of the age of our permanent employees. If we look back 10 years, we can see that there was a pretty diverse distribution of ages within the various age categories. This year, it's pretty much balanced across the different age categories. If we look at just the management and all employees, for example, on the management side, what we're seeing is that, again, it's still pretty evenly distributed from the early years of starting in a career to the years that are pushing on retirement. And again, all employees is still fairly even or level. This is where I'm adding some workforce diversity information for your information. This slide, along with the next three slides, reflects some demographic information, which is based on some quarterly snapshots that HR has taken mid-year for our internal purposes. If this information is meaningful to the board this year, we can include this in the HR in future HR dashboards. This snapshot was taken in August of this last year, and when we look back at the previous year, it remains the same. We had a 75 to 25% distribution of gender employees within the agency.
Is that for all employees, seasonal and
yes,
permanent?
That's all employees.
Thanks.
This is a snapshot of the ethnicity. It speaks for itself. We have a pretty significant number of white, Caucasian, male and females within the agency, and a fairly thin line of diversity otherwise across that. And here's the diversity of hires. And it reflects the previous slide, really. We're seeing the same thing. A number of employees employees, they're not required to disclose their ethnicity or any of that kind of personal, confidential demographic information about themselves. So as you can see, 13% did not disclose. And then with regard to employee development opportunities, that's what this slide presents. There were significant number of development opportunities on the left there for white males and white females, and then across the line there were some developmental opportunities for other ethnicities within the agency. And I'm sorry, the developmental opportunities are work out of class and lead work roles in the agency. So ODF retirements by year, again, looking back over 10 years, this slide is fairly similar. Well, it's mostly the same as the slide you looked last year with 2017 added and 2007 dropped off. But as you can see, there were, again, a significant number of retirements in 2017. Again, the spikes in 09, 13, and 17 are also coinciding with some PERS legislation that took place. And in my personal experience in human resources with state government, every year there's PERS legislation that takes place. There's a significant increase in the exodus of folks who are eligible to retire. Now, 2016 didn't have any PERS legislation, but what it might represent is that we actually are on the cusp of that aging workforce that's ready to move into retirement, irrespective of PERS legislation. Here's retirements by year and service classification. 2015 had a significant number of retirements by management employees in the field. And that's the orange line at the bottom there. 2016 had a spike in the number of retirements by Salem represented employees. And that's the long blue line in 2016. Whoop, excuse me. And also a rise in the number of retirements by Salem management employees, which is the, I'll call it yellow or gold line. 2017 had a high number of retirements by field represented employees, which is again that blue line. No, field represented, the gray line. And then also Salem represented employees, which is the blue line. Retirement eligibility for 2017, as you can see, all permanent employees, management, and then all permanent employees projected for 2022 and management for 2022. So we are seeing an aging workforce moving towards retirement eligibility. 20.4% of all permanent employees were eligible to retire in 2017, but only 4.96, or roughly 5%, actually did retire. And that speaks, you know, I think that's pretty reflective of forestry. We have a lot of folks that don't just retire when they're eligible to retire that work for this agency. This is an agency, an employer of choice, and we have employees that work here 40, 45 years and then come back as retirees to do whatever they can. So, you know, we're very blessed with that. And management, 23.3% were eligible in 2017, but only 3.14% actually did pull the plug. By 2022, 30.3% of all permanent employees are eligible to retire. They're projected to be eligible. and 37.7 of all the management employees. These projections are actually based on the ages and the PERS eligibility data that we took a snapshot of on December 1st of this last year. Retention data. This year we had a turnover rate of about 11.3%. So that includes both retirements and other reasons, as noted in the asterisk down below, transfers, resignations, moving on to other agencies, involuntary terminations. Seasonal turnover was about 30% from the 2016 fire season. And the average state service for a permanent LD employee within our agency is at this point about 14%. That means that of all of our employees, the average length of service to date in 2017 was about 14 years, not percent. The leadership team, there's 43 staff members that make up this agency's leadership team, 15 in the executive leadership, 23 in divisional and field leadership, and then five program managers or program directors in the administrative services division. These are projected leadership team retirement projections. That includes both executive and the categories that were in the previous slide, leadership team, the executive team, and the administrative services directors, five positions there. This data was based on a survey that we took of when folks thought they might be retiring. And we actually had, I think it was 63 or 65% response to that survey, which is a pretty good response for a survey. So it's fairly accurate in terms of just giving us a picture of what the future might look like. 21% of LT is expected to retire over the next 5 years. And as you saw previously, we have a higher number who are eligible, but based on what we're hearing now from the people, it looks like 21% might be retiring in the next 5 years. In terms of recruitments, and I have a whole lot more slides, but I wanted to make this brief for you folks. So this slide actually would follow some other information about our recruitment processes this past year. These were recruitments for our leadership positions in 2017, and this reflects the number of candidates we had, both internal and external, for those key leadership positions within the agency. And as you can see, we had good numbers of candidates who qualified for these positions, both internally and externally, in most categories. We had six vacancies at the LT level. Out of 52 total candidates, 11 were actually internal to ODF. And of those, five of those candidates were hired. So of those six vacancies, five were actually filled internally, which speaks well of our succession management program that we have in the agency. Leadership training, which is an investment that the agency makes in our employees toward the interests of our succession management and filling those key leadership roles within the agency. Seven employees were selected for formal leadership development training in 2017. Those trainings include the PSU Executive Seminar, the Ascent Managers Leadership Program, the Pacific Program, Leadership Oregon. Average cost is about $4,500 per student, and there's an average of about 8.6 days of training provided to the students that attend those trainings. I'm going to move on to some safety
stuff. On the leadership training, what were the demographics associated with the seven that...
I would have to look into that. I don't have that data with me, okay, but that'd be good information to know.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jenna made a note. Thank you, Jenna. Safety statistics. Last year, the board requested that we present the safety statistics a little bit differently, that we look at kind of an incident rate. And so we've attempted to do that, and hopefully that'll meet that interest. And we can, this is a work in progress every year. We can continue to work toward giving you the kind of information that you want in this dashboard. So here's the exposure hours over the past 5 years of all of our employees. and it's kind of a baseline to compare to. Here's the recordable injury rates per 100 employees. So from 2013 to 2017, we had a lower recordable injury rate in 2016 than the other 4 years. In 2017, it was back up again. And if I go back to this slide again, you can see that both in 2016 and 17, the exposure hours were similar. So we did have a little bit of a rise or an increase in our recordable injury rate this past year. One of the things that I think it's important to note, though, is these numbers can be deceiving. If we exclude things like poison oak, bee stings, and tick bites, those kinds of injuries, we would actually be at 7.1%. in 2017. So certain hazards are difficult to prevent just because of the geographic areas and the environmental environments that our employees work in. And this is a look at the safety statistics, the recordable injury rate across the statewide and across the three areas that we have. Four when you add Salem. And you all have this as a handout, so you can look at this and ask questions later, too, of me for clarification. So the recordable injury rate for the request was also included, your request also included, can we compare to some other entities? And so this is a national comparison. And ODF, as you can see, has 8.7. And then forestry general and firefighting, including structural, shows where we're at. Number of employees injured per 100.
So the comparison, who is that? Like other departments of forestry across the country?
No, this is actually the federal system at this point. We haven't been able to figure out how to get really meaningful data from other entities. However, we did from Washington Department of Natural Resources, and that's what this reflects. But again, it's very difficult to actually make meaningful comparisons because, as you can see here, Washington Department of Natural Resources looks like they have a higher incident rate. They also had 1,400 FTE this past year and twice our exposure hours. So whether they're doing better than us or we're doing better than them, it really is hard to tell when you're comparing in that way. I want to go back to this slide. What this shows is that the challenge of doing a comparison to the federal system is that they break apart. They break apart their, I can't remember exactly how that worked. They don't just have everything we do. They have a rate for forestry work, and they have a rate for fire work, and fire work includes structural work, and we don't do structural firefighting. And so that slide's kind of difficult to make sense out of, I guess, at least for me. So again, here, Washington DNR, I think the more important point to make on this slide or any slides where we're trying to look at data in a comparative way, for us, I think the most important thing, because it's difficult to make sense comparatively, is to look at our own accomplishments and our own success. Are we doing better progressively year after year? Or are we in a holding pattern, or are we struggling? You know, we're going to try to do a little bit better trying to make sense out of some of our comparative data. I think the most important focus really is how are we doing compared to ourselves? You know, are we improving or not? And this is just numbers of incidents over a 10-year average. The blue is this year and the gray is the 10-year average. And so for our safe claims, we're pretty much holding even over a 10-year average this past year. Incidents, we actually had some improvement in our incidents, and the recordable claims altogether, we've shown some improvement. And that was the last slide. So if there are some additional questions.
Just one quick comment, and that is I appreciated seeing the demographic information added to the dashboard and would encourage you to keep it.
Sure.
Almost sort of made the comment in the opening with the year in review stuff on the broader social context. It was the year of the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's rather important, number one, to keep track of demographic information and leadership mm-hmm. training information and that sort of thing. And I think it's well worth applauding the department for the diversity in its leadership positions. I think that tends to create an environment where we're less likely to have sexual discrimination and assault incidents within the agency, and it's to be applauded.
Peter, I have a question for both of you. You've been actively involved in the Environmental Justice Task Force as well, correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
And maybe because I feel like that might be a really brief update for us on sort of the status of that and what you've been doing there might be helpful for us. Linking to the diversity and
work. We have Andy White and Ryan Gordon serve as our representatives that go to those meetings. And right now we're beginning to really figure out how to effectively engage with that committee or that board. The Environmental Justice Board had been working pretty much without any support for a number of time. And so agendas don't come out in advance. And so our folks have been really challenged to be prepped and to have to be able to engage in that group. And I think that's being worked on. The governor's office has committed some staffing to the Environmental Justice Task Force. And at the last meeting, there was sort of a recognition that there is still an ongoing problem in how to engage in those topics. And, I think our folks are looking to be able to engage and be able to prepare and present information as a committee wants. But it's hard to do it if you just get asked on the spot. Yeah. So I think that's a work in progress, but I do think that's a committee that we'll continue to support as we can. Just another note, we also, the leadership team and the planning team, and I think I mentioned this perhaps at the retreat, took on diversity, equity, and inclusion as a theme of our four leadership team meetings and really looked at how do we improve that commitment. And recently we did add a value into our value statement. I mentioned we were considering doing that, and the executive team did do that. We added a statement of our support of diversity, equity, inclusion. And I will be getting that out. I'll send a copy to the board, and I have some work to do with the board. I know that there was interest expressed in including that in the board's value statements. So,
two things real quick. One, I think it's given what you just said about the value about diversity, equity, inclusion, and the other comments made, and then seeing the results of recruitment. Obviously, it strikes me that some further work needs to be done on recruitment around diversity, and some of that may also just be looking at your candidate pool. How diverse is the pool of applicants coming? Because you clearly want to be able to hire the best available candidates for each spot. And if you're not getting diversity in your application pool, then how do we work with the various universities and other training institutions to encourage more diversity coming through those programs and that could be future candidates for positions here? But at some rate, thinking more thoughtfully about recruitment and the connection to training, I think is a good idea. The second thing, you mentioned on 2016 that there was a high rate of retirement and you weren't sure exactly why. it didn't strike me that it was because there was an abnormal bulge in employees. What I heard in Eastern Oregon is that it was because many ODF employees had had three very high wage earning years because of the fire seasons, mm-hmm. and that they were maxing out on their PERS. And there was no reason for them to try to work again, because if they didn't do that again, they'd actually be losing on their retirement payment. And to the extent that that's true, you might want to be thinking about how the fire season is also affecting future retirement questions.
I guess just one, thanks for the information. It's helpful. I think with each one, you get more refined, and I like the data. I appreciate the comments about diversity. I think there's opportunity, not just within this department and in many organizations. If you look at the diversity of the state, and I'm going to be off by probably a couple of percentage points, but ethnic diversity wise, the state of Oregon is about 25% non-white. And I think if my numbers are accurate, we're about 7%, 7 or 8% non-white in the department. So obviously, as you think looking forward, how do we attract and retain a more ethnically diverse workforce going forward? It's going to be important for this organization to be successful and have the talent we need going into the future. The other component I just throw out is just an observation of mine relative to my experience in the private sector around safety. It's great to start pulling the data, but the numbers seem really high in terms of incident rate. And I'd be curious about what that's costing us as an organization. Whether you're looking at that in terms of time loss, often it's not the direct cost of the medical attention, it's actually the time loss and the impact on organizational capacity as a result of those things. Quite frequently, there's actually huge returns to a much more aggressive safety management program if you keep your employees working, obviously, mm-hmm. and an 8+ incident rate seems high to me. There's not a lot of benchmarking here, obviously. And the reason I like incident rate is it does provide a framework, a baseline in terms of doing that in the context of exposure hours. So I would argue that you can compare to DNR regardless of whether they have twice the workforce. They're doing that calculation based on a denominator that recognizes mm-hmm. that double the workforce. I'll continue to be looking at what the department continues to do from the safety side. Obviously, human life and concern around that's big, and we have a lot of employees that are working in dangerous jobs and such. And so I think paying attention to that just from a moral human standpoint is critically important too.
I just add to some of what Tom said, that I think it would be helpful too, maybe next year, to get a little more flavor of what are the kinds of incidents that are occurring here, and as opposed to just the numbers, so we get a better flavor of where we're running into problems. I think that would be helpful.
Poison oak and tick.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, John.
Thank you.